Hello, my name is Eileen, and I am pleased to read for you this today the pantograph. We'll be reading the pantograph for Monday, January 20th, 2020. And we'll begin with the front page, and we'll begin with an article about road repairs. Road repairs on the agenda. Council to discuss street resurfacing. And this is in Normal. Street resurfacing construction plans for the upcoming 2020 construction season will be discussed Tuesday night by the Normal City Council. The meeting was pushed back one day due to the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, and all city offices will be closed Monday. The proposed motor fuel tax budget includes more than $1.5 million in funds for street resurfacing. For projects using motor fuel tax funding, the Illinois Department of Transportation requires a resolution approved by the local governing body in advance of disbursing MFT funds. Normal's street resurfacing project are funded by a combination of general fund and motor fuel source. The preliminary list of street segments to be resurfaced include Hovey Avenue from White Oak Road to Cottage Avenue. Newer concrete pavement sections will be omitted. Parkside Road from Aaron Drive to College Avenue. And Fort Jesse Road to Landmark Drive to Greenbrier Drive. Planned work on these street segments includes milling and resurfacing, sidewalk and ADA ramp accessibility improvements, curb and gutter repair, and drainage structure repair and adjustment. Additional street repair funding also is proposed in the budget, $1.1 million. Street resurfacing work that will be designed and bid as a separate contract. This non-MFT street resurfacing work is also planned for the summer of 2020. The total fiscal year 2020-2021 budget proposed for street resurfacing is $2.655 million. The 2020 street resurfacing program will repair street segments that have deteriorated beyond minor maintenance repair and are in need of contracted capital construction. Streets are selected for repair based on several factors, including condition, underlying utility needs, traffic level, rehabilitation type, deterioration rate, and cost. In other business, the council is expected to authorize an agreement for construction materials testing services for the 2020 construction season with Ramsey Geotechnical Engineering, LLC of Bloomington, approve an ordinance accepting permanent easements in connection with the Glen Avenue Bridge Reconstruction Project, and approve a resolution authorizing the filing of the town's Community Development Block Grant 2024 Consolidated Plan and Action Plan for next year. The Climate Action Campaign on Community Issues also is expected to make a presentation on emergency preparedness. The next article is on the library. Ready to expand. Library Board to select architect on Tuesday. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The Bloomington Public Library Board of Trustees is slated Tuesday night to evaluate the qualifications of four firms and select one as its new architect to move a scaled-down expansion plan forward. But the firms don't include the Bloomington firm that has studied the issue for 5 years. It's for agricultural services, said BPL Executive Director Jean Hamilton. What we're looking for them to do is bring us some conceptual designs and let us see what we could do at a little bit lower price tag. The last number that we had was $28.5 million, and the feedback that we've received is to bring it down to $15 million range, she said. What we're envisioning is two or three options that an architect would propose for us to choose from, because we know we're going to have to make cuts in what we feel the community needs. We'll have to make a list of priorities and figure out which ones best meet those needs. The Farnsworth Group of Bloomington, which served as a consultant to study factors including the library's needs, estimated $28.5 million would be required to double the size of the current building from 57,700 square feet, adding more parking and green space. Farnsworth estimated it could cost $52 million to develop a more elaborate civic-style campus occupied by for-profit retail stores and offices and nonprofit organizations on city-owned land just south of the library's current location. We understand that the ideal is impossible, said Library Board President Julian Westerhout. Something more realistic from the perspective getting city council support, we think probably it's going to be an expansion in about the range of $15 million. That, obviously, is just a ballpark and not a hard figure. The library will need additional funding from the city to make the expansion possible. The city council has not made a funding commitment, so there is no timeline for the project. At a special meeting January 11, the trustees heard presentations from four finalists selected from among 12 firms, including Farnsworth, that responded to the request for qualifications. Farnsworth was hired in 2015 to study the library's current and future space needs, evaluate whether the current building at 205 East Olive Street could support a large addition, and come up with conceptual design work to suggest that it is feasible. Farnsworth agreed to an initial fee of $80,500, but additional expenses were added as additional work was requested. The library had a good relationship with Farnsworth, but the board really felt at this point that they were just ready to have fresh eyes on the project and that a different, new perspective could come up with options or solutions to help move this project forward, said Hamilton. The finalists are Dewberry, an architectural, interior design, and structural engineering consultant based in Peoria, Gensler and Michael C. Barnes Architects, Chicago, Enberg Anderson Architects, Rosemont, and Sheehan Nagel Hartray Architects in Chicago. Once the firm is chosen, the library board will negotiate the scope of the work to be done and cost for that, said Westerhout. We will hopefully decide on which firm we want to negotiate with to enter into a contract, he said. I think the board generally is pretty pleased that we have four very strong firms. I think their decision is not necessarily going to be super easy. At the special meeting, the firms talked about their design philosophies, how they do their work, and why they thought they would be the best choice for the project, said Westerhout. This is sort of the next step, he added. We will choose a firm that will work with the library board and the library director and staff and the community, and then come up with some conceptual ideas and sort of a price tag in concert with us. We will then go before council to present that. The current building was designed for a city with a population of 41,000 people. While the population has increased 87%, the library space has increased only 25%, with a small addition and renovation in 2006. We hope the work that this new firm will do will create support and excitement for the project and allows the council to have the information it needs to say, yes, this is a project we can get behind and we can help with funding, Hamilton said. In state elected president of Illinois Senate, Lightford will remain as majority leader. Jerry Nowicki and Peter Hancock wrote this article. Springfield. Senator Don Harmon, Democrat, Oak Park, was elected as the 39th president of the Illinois Senate on Sunday after hours of behind-the-scenes negotiation. The race had been weeks in the making, and by the time the closed-door negotiations began Sunday, shortly after 11 a.m., the field of candidates was down to two. Harmon, who has served in the chamber since 2003, and Senator Kimberly Lightford, a Maywood Democrat and the majority leader, who has served in the Senate since 1998. Negotiations took place in the Senate President's office, which was then occupied by John Cullerton, who relinquished the gavel Sunday prior to the vote on Harmon. The doors to that office were locked to the public and media. Harmon succeeds Cullerton, a Chicago Democrat, who surprised his colleagues in November by announcing his plans to step down. He resigned his Senate seat shortly after Harmon was sworn in. Harmon reportedly held a 22-17 lead over the first blind ballot, with two senators calling in their votes via phone. Midway through the second round of negotiations, Senator Emil Jones III, a Chicago Democrat whose father was the previous Senate president before Cullerton, spoke briefly with reporters about the intensity of the negotiations. "I don't want to say hard feelings, but strong emotions," he said of tension among Democrats. "The stakes are high, so emotions are running." The race appeared to divide the Senate Black Caucus. Jones, who is an African American, said he backed Harmon in the race, but Lightford, also an African American, was vying to become the first woman elected Senate president. "I did vote for him, Harmon, on the first round," Jones said. "Going back and forth, sitting down with both candidates, I had to make a decision for my district. I want to best represent my district, and I picked which person I want to help me represent my district." Democrats emerged from their closed-door caucus shortly before 5 p.m. with a deal that Lightford would concede the race and support Harmon, but that she would also stay on as majority leader. After the caucus meeting, the full Senate convened for the formal vote. "Don and I have neighboring districts, and we have since 2002, Lightford said in a speech nominating Harmon. "So we've been neighbors in the western suburbs and on the west side of Chicago. We've been neighbors in our district offices, Senate offices. We've been neighbors here on the Senate floor. I can't think of anyone else who would do a wonderful job of leading our caucus, and I look forward to working with him in unity." The vote went 37-12 in Harmon's favor. Two of the Senate's 40 Democrats were absent from the chamber, and Cullerton abstained. Harmon and Majority Leader Bill Brady, Republican of Bloomington, voted for each other as Republicans ceremoniously nominated Brady for the post. In a two-minute media availability after the vote, Harmon said he expects unity from Democrats after the long race between he and Lightford. You know, we're Democrats. We fight with each other, but we always seem to come together and rally around the important issues for working families of Illinois, he said. I have no doubt that there will be work involved, but we will be able to do that successfully and move forward as a very united caucus. Harmon, 53, was born and raised in Oak Park. During the 2019 session, he was the principal sponsor in the Senate of the proposed constitutional amendment to overhaul the state's income tax system, which will appear in the November general election ballot. Earlier, he pushed for legislation to require gun dealers to be licensed by the state and to expand early childhood education programs. He also has been an advocate for voting rights and clean energy initiatives. A staunch advocate for working families, Don was instrumental in shepherding the most sweeping and consequential legislative agenda through the state Senate last year, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who presided over the floor vote, said in a statement following Harmon's election. Harmon takes over leadership of the Senate at a time when some Democratic lawmakers are being targeted by a sprawling federal investigation. Former Senator Martin Sandoval, Democrat from Chicago, was forced to step down last year after federal authorities executed a search warrant on his state house office. In addition, Senator Tom Cullerton, Democrat, Villa Park, was indicted last year on federal charges alleging that he was on a ghost payroll of a Chicago labor union, being paid while doing little or no work. He continues to hold office and has said he intends to serve when lawmakers convene the 2020 session later this month. Harmon acknowledged the ethical cloud hanging over the General Assembly. In his first speech after being sworn in, he quoted the late President John F. Kennedy saying, "No responsibility of government is more fundamental than the responsibility of maintaining the highest standard of ethical behavior for those who conduct the business, the public business." On more local news, communication group to honor BN Women. This is by a Pantograph staff member. In Bloomington, several women have been nominated for awards from the Bloomington Normal Chapter of the Association for Women in Communications. The annual award dinner will be February 27th. Cynthia Bruno, founder of Girls Go For It, will keynote the dinner, which begins at 5:30 p.m. at the Illinois State University Alumni Center. Tickets are at a WCBN organization. Winners will be announced in three categories: the Outstanding Woman in Communications, the Innovation Awards, and the Crystal Award. Nominees for Outstanding Women are Liz German, Interim CEO and President of YWCA McLean County; Rachel Hatch, Assistant Director of Media Relations for Illinois State University and Assistant Superintendent Diane Wolf of Bloomington School District 87. Nominees for an Innovation Award are Angel Howard, Office of the Vice President for Student Affairs at Illinois State University; Leah Johnson, Head Volleyball Coach for Illinois State University; Jessica McLean Shaw, Coordinator for the Baby Folds Festival of Trees; and Sue Sebring, Manager of Volunteer and Auxiliary Services for Advocate Bro Men. Stephanie Duquesne of Illinois State University and Kristen Milosh, oh boy, this is a hard one, M-I-L-A-S-H-O-S-K-I of B-O-P-I, are nominated for the Crystal Award, which recognizes the chapter's Member of the Year. Several scholarships also will be awarded. Here's the Veterans Corner by Jerry Vogler, Sr. The new year begins a new cycle of events sponsored by the VA and other veteran-related organizations. Please take note of these events and support their efforts to serve veterans. Lexington American Legion Post 291 presents its annual sausage and pancake breakfast on Saturday at the Lexington High School cafeteria from 6 a.m. to noon. To purchase tickets and place meat orders, contact a Post 291 member or call 309-365-7190 or 309-365-8138. Tickets and a limited amount of extra sausage and other meat will be on sale at the door. The event raises funds for American Legion programs and other community activities. Ileana VA Medical Center staff has scheduled two veteran town halls that will include staff updates on care, programs, and services. VA staff will be present to assist veterans on completing Form 10 10EZ application for veterans' health care. Veterans seeking help should bring their Form DD 214. The first meeting will be February 20th at Pontiac City Hall from 4 to 5:30 p.m. The second meeting will be March 16th at the Champaign Public Library from 5 to 6:30 p.m. The Agent Orange Quilt of Tears will be on display at the Orland Park Civic Center, 14700 Ravinia in Orland Park from February 5th through February 9th. The presentation commemorates veterans affected by exposure to Agent Orange and draws national attention to the plight of veterans affected by Agent Orange used during Vietnam. For more information, visit www.agentorangequiltoftears.com. An article on Social Security by Elaine Popejoy, Social Security District Manager, Bloomington. It typically takes people a lifetime of planning to reach their retirement goals. The earlier young workers know about saving for their future, the better chance they'll have at achieving a comfortable retirement. This is why Social Security has created a resource specially for teachers and students. Our Information for Educators page contains a toolkit with information and resources to educate and engage students on Social Security programs and services. Within the toolkit, you'll find two lesson plans with objectives, infographics and handouts for each lesson plan, links to Social Security web pages, talking points, quiz questions, and answers. It's important for students to understand why Social Security was created and why it is essential to their lives today and in the future. This knowledge and understanding will provide students a strong base on which to build their financial future. You can access the webpage and toolkit at www.socialsecurity.gov/thirdparty/educators.html. Young workers can also see how Social Security directly relates to them at www.socialsecurity.gov/people/students. Encouraging young people to save now for long-term goals that are decades away, can be somewhat difficult. Let them know they have a better chance of realizing their dreams if they start planning and taking action early. And also, let them know that they can share this information with friends, both in person and on social media. Friends reunited with cards. Minor leaguers Gorman and Liberatore grew up together. This is by Randy Reinhart. Bloomington. Normal Nolan Gorman and Matthew Liberatore have known each other since they were five. Baseball has been the stitching that has bound them together. Playing the game at a high level has been the goal through summer club teams, days as high school rivals, and in the minor leagues. An earlier trade this month that brought Liberatore to the St. Louis Cardinals has made them teammates again. It's been overwhelming emotions and excitement, Liberatore said Saturday at the Cardinal Caravan stop at the Park Regency Hotel. Getting an opportunity to play with Nolan again has been more than exciting. Liberatore, the number 6 ranked left-handed pitcher in the minor leagues according to Major League Baseball Pipeline, came to the Cardinals on January 9th along with minor league catcher Eduardo Rodriguez, outfielders Jose Martinez and Randy Arozarena were dealt to Tampa Bay in exchange. He gave me a call when he found out. We're both pretty excited to be in the same organization and be able to work together and help each other, said Gorman, a slugging third baseman. After we got drafted, we talked about how cool it would be to try to win a championship together. The next offseason comes and he happens to be in a trade, and it's to the right team, the Cardinals, and it's pretty exciting. Gorman was the Cardinals' first-round draft pick out of O'Connor High School in 2018. As the 19th pick overall, Liberatore, a product of Mountain Ridge High School, had gone to Tampa Bay at number 16. The 6'1", 210-pound Gorman is ranked as the number 3 prospect in the St. Louis farm system by Baseball America. He dropped a spot when Liberatore was placed on number 2 after the trade. Gorman, who won't turn 20 years old until May, played at Peoria in 2018 and 19. Last season, he belted 15 home runs and batted .248 average at Peoria and High A Palm Beach. It was good. There were a lot of learning points, said Gorman, who would like a chance to start at Double A in 2020. There were a lot of times when I grew as a person and understood what it takes to get my body right for a full season. The 6'5 Liberatore spent all last season in the Low A Midwest League, where he was 6'2 with a 3.10 ERA. His fastball touches 95 miles per hour, but the curve is considered his best pitch. The assignment to Palm Beach would appear the next step. The past couple weeks I've been working on the slider since I've been throwing bullpens again, the 20-year-old Liberatore said. I switched my grip halfway through last season. I've been working on how to manipulate the pitch and how I can use it. Both Gorman and Liberatore are considered top 60 prospects in the minor leagues. Now, those dreams of possibly winning a World Series together, wearing the same jersey, are starting to be in the picture a little bit, said Liberatore. I think that's really cool.